Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Today, we have a bit of an audio snafu on my part. I'm not sure what happened, but my audio during this interview is not good. I must have had the wrong microphone selected, as it does not sound like my mic at all. And it sounds suspiciously like the laptop microphone to me. Oy vey. Well, things happen in life, which is one of the themes of both this interview and my guest's excellent book, March or Die. The audio of my guest sounds fantastic, by the way, so we got that going for us, which is nice. I still think you'll find great value in today's far-ranging conversation. And like I said, my guest is great. We talk all about living in purpose, aligning with God, what can trip up men, and how to stay present in life. And running through the whole conversation and a central pillar of his book is the role of adversity as a teacher. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. Something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Jeremy Stalnecker. Jeremy is a veteran, a father, an author, and CEO of the Mighty Oaks Foundation, an organization dedicated to helping America's military and their families. Here is my interview with Jeremy Stalnecker. All right, I am here with Jeremy Stalnecker, veteran, patriot, and author. Jeremy Stalnecker. Jeremy, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I discovered you. I found your book, your excellent book, March or Die. You're a really good writer, by the way. It was really well put together. I really like how you think and deal with really complicated issues. And before we really get going on, we're going to dig into some of the book and then some other stuff just around men and healing and all that stuff. But before we really get going, just give us the listeners a little bit of a background, like where you're from, how long did you serve in the military and in what capacity? And then, you know, any kids, and then where do you live now?
Yeah. So I grew up in Southern California. And that's where I live now. In fact, it's funny. I live about 15 minutes from where I grew up. And I always joke that I spent most of my adult life trying to get away. And God brought me right back. So that's where I am.
Nice.
I live in the city of Murrieta in Southern California. My kids are nearby. I have four kids. My daughter is my oldest, 26. I have a 24-year-old son who's married and has a little girl, our granddaughter. And then I have two high school kids. So a very full life. Served in the Marine Corps, as you mentioned. I went into the Marine Corps in 1996 and left active duty in 2003. And my last deployment was to Iraq in January of 2003, which is what the book March or Die is actually about. So it's been quite a journey. And as we record this, I think 23 years ago, today is when we went into Iraq. So a lot of thoughts around that today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the book is full of really great stories from your time in the service. And I grabbed a few things out of the book. There's so much to choose from, but first question that I had is, you know, I grabbed a quote where you said, quote, "Many people have stopped really living because something they planned for never came together. They no longer dream because their dreams have never become reality," unquote. I wanted to get your coaching on that, because I see this so much in men and women, but the show is really zeroed in on men. And I see a lot of trying something and it didn't work. And then it's like it defines their whole life. Like a good example is I have a number of people that have been entrepreneurs, and the businesses didn't do what they envisioned. Mm. And now it's like they seem like they just got their ass kicked and they don't want to pick themselves back up and learn the lessons. And so, and it's like the years are going by and it's like, dude, come on. Like, that was a temporary setback, but they don't see it that way. There's just kind of, I think sometimes there's men that just get so just broken by what they view as failure rather than learning. But I wanted to get, like, how do you coach somebody that you come across in your world where maybe something happened in the service or on deployment or maybe just in life, and then they're not brushing themselves back off and continuing?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot wrapped up in that. I make the statement sometimes that there are people who become so overwhelmed by the unexpected that they then become the lifelong victims of a one-time event. Mm. People become so overwhelmed by the unexpected, they become the lifelong victims of a one-time event. And I think this is what you're talking about. Things did not go the way that I thought they would, or something turned that I never thought possible. A relationship changes, a financial reversal. So maybe I set out to do something good and it didn't turn out. Maybe I've been doing something good and it took a turn and now it's bad. Whatever the case, it's that thing I couldn't imagine happening has happened.
Yeah.
And what often then happens in the heart of the person that's experienced that is they become the lifelong victim of that really one-time event. And it may be a very difficult event, but they become a victim. And I try to make the point that there's a difference between being victimized and being a victim. There's a difference between surviving something and becoming a survivor. We allow, if we're not careful, the failures and the hurts and the difficulties and the unexpected events in our lives to become who we are. And so now we are a victim. And we live at a time where so many people are dealing with victimhood. And that's different than surviving. That's different than having been a victim. We don't always get to choose what happens to us. But the next part with that and what's associated with that understanding is, even though we can't choose what happens to us necessarily, we always get to decide what happens next. We always get to decide how we're going to fight or how we're going to respond. And so it's both of those things together. It's understanding. Unexpected things come into your life. That's life. But that does not need to become your identity. Mm-hmm. And when those things do come into your life, you now get to choose what happens next. And I'll stop there, but we could talk all day just about that.
Yeah, I didn't write it down, but I remember getting wrote this, and I thought it was brilliant. You know, you said, we don't plan for the unexpected because you're busy planning for what you think is going to happen, right?
Right.
The unexpected always blindsides us because you're like, I didn't expect that. I mean, like, it's literally not on your radar when you're drawing out your 5 and 10 year plans, and all of a sudden you're like, uh-oh, you know, where did this come from? And how much is this going to change my trajectory or even my priorities? It could be a health issue. It could be something happened to a family member. It could be the loss of, health, relationship, parent, you know, whatever is the unexpected event. It can really test your faith. It could test your, your principles and what you live by when you're like it. Your faith really is universal. It applies to all situations. We'll get into more of that later when we talk about the sovereignty of God and all that. But I think unexpected events have a unique ability to be a test of somebody of faith, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's recognizing that the unexpected does not get to control your life now, unless you want it to, or unless you allow it to.
Right.
And for a person of faith, to your point, there is a confidence that God is outside of space and time. He's outside of this situation. He has a plan for me. And the unexpected things that come into my life, meaning I didn't anticipate them, I didn't expect them, those things do not change God's plan. You know, James chapter 1, verse 1 tells us that often God allows those trials to come into our life so that he can use them in a way that really builds us into the people he wants us to be. The trials, the unexpected circumstances, the difficulties, the battles we face, whatever terminology you use, God's not taken off guard by any of that. And faith is resting in, I didn't expect this, but God knew it was coming. I'll trust him through it. I'll learn what I need to learn. And then I will not allow this unexpected situation or circumstance to gain control over my life. I'm not the victim of what's happened to me. Mm-hmm. I can move forward. And fundamentally, I think a lot of people get so stuck that they never really do move forward. And that's a decision they make, although they may not see it that way.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, in one of your chapters, you got a chapter called It's Not About You, great title. You wrote, quote, when we focus on others, everything changes, unquote. And I wanted to ask about this because I didn't really realize that it wasn't all about me until I was probably in my late 30s, right? Like, I just think, you know, the culture, myself, you know, I was a young guy trying to make my way in the world. You know, there's this tendency to not really consider mission or what your life is like in service to the community when you're younger. At least it wasn't for me. And I do see a lot of younger guys struggling with this distinction. And I have seen a lot of men become much more service oriented or others oriented as they've gotten to be a certain age. Now, for me, it was probably late 30s when all of a sudden I had this light bulb moment that my life was about what was my mission? What was God's mission for me? What was the work that God wanted me to do in the world? But also, how am I going to help ease others' pain? How am I going to help others? But I was clueless when I was younger. And when I say younger, I was well into my 30s before I had that aha. And I don't know. Yeah. I just wanted to get your insights in that. Like, do you see the younger guys kind of struggling with it more because of the social media? And it's kind of all about, you know, I want to be a YouTube star. It's just a little bit of like, I want to be famous, which is a very kind of, you know, self-centered viewpoint, not knocking the young guys. It's just a natural kind of growth. Or do you see men of all, you know, backgrounds and ages struggling with that particular distinction?
Yeah, I think this is a universal challenge, not just for men, but for human beings. We are, you know, by nature, very selfish and self-centered. We come out of the womb screaming for food. We want people to take care of us. And so if we don't at some point in our lives mature to a place where we're no longer focused on ourselves, but asking the question, how can I use what I have available to me for the benefit of others? If we don't come to that place, then we haven't matured. And I'd say it this way for men, I really believe that in so many ways, you can define manhood a number of ways, but in so many ways, manhood, becoming a man, you know, what does it mean to be a man? Well, becoming a man happens. The Apostle Paul said, when I was a child, I thought like a child, I acted like a child, I spoke like a child, but when I became a man, I put childish things behind me. And I think when we get to the place where we accept responsibility, so we're not blaming anyone else for what's happening, we accept responsibility for our actions, we accept responsibility for the words that we say and the thoughts that we have, and we recognize that the world is not about us, beginning to leverage what we have for the benefit of others, that's when we become men. And you know, sometimes when I'm talking about this, I try to draw the distinction between the 14-year-old boy who loses his father, and now there's some work that needs to be done around the house. That kid has to grow up. He's taking care of family stuff. He's helping his mom, who's now working a full-time job to put food on the table. He has to give up some things that a child, a young person, would normally enjoy because he's taking responsibility for himself, his situation, and he's doing what's best for his family and not just himself. That young man, he may be 14, 15 years old, but that's a man. He's taking responsibility. He's not looking at the world through his own lens. And we all know people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and older who, at the end of the day, the world absolutely revolves around them. They care about what they care about, what they can get out of other people. And if people don't serve them or their needs aren't met, they're very upset. And so that person, maybe 60, 70 years old, if the world still revolves around them, as far as I'm concerned, they're not a man. And so this is fundamental to manhood, standing up, taking responsibility, leading the way, and doing what's best for others and not just for yourself. And, you know, I could spend a lot of time on this. Philippians chapter 2 tells us that we should have the mind of Christ, because even though he is God, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Why? Because we needed him to be a savior. Not because he needed it, because we needed it. And that to me is the ultimate example of what this looks like.
Really well said, Jeremy. You know, I know there's a lot of men in their 40s, 50s, and 60s that still spend hours playing video games. And that is just not serving others whatsoever. I'm not knocking the gamers, man. I get it, you know, but it's just kind of like, oh man. What I wanted to ask you, you know, we both have done kind of deep dives into men. What is a man? Male psychology, all that stuff. What challenges do you see men from all walks of life and all ages? What are some things that you like? Oh, I see this guy struggling with that. That's one that a lot of men struggle with. And maybe even like, is there anything you see that is really unique to men as what they struggle with more than women do, let's say? But yeah, I was just kind of curious more on the first question, but also, is there any of them that are like, that seems really unique to being men compared to, yeah.
So, you know, we would naturally, I think, fall back to things like men struggle with pornography and men struggle with, you know, some of those things that we would say those are kind of man sins or whatever.
Yeah.
I really believe that fundamentally what we all struggle with, what men seem to struggle with to a greater degree often is around that identity and purpose. Mm-hmm. If I can't define what it is to be a man, what am I even supposed to do as a man? And particularly in the culture that we live in where, I mean, let's be honest, manhood is being torn down all the time. The idea of being a man, yep. I mean, sometimes just being male, yep. is viewed negatively in our society. There are activists in the, we'll say the non-man community, right? It spans a lot of different groups, but activists who tear down the idea of being a man who would want to have a wife and children and lead what we would consider to be a normal life. And so, so men are looking at the world and culture around them and asking, okay, well, what exactly does it mean to be a man? And if I live out what I think is manhood, is that toxic and is that degrading to others? And so they've got these big questions. And then men find so much identity in their work. Well, what if that changes? And what if that shifts? And what if, particularly in my late teens and early 20s and maybe mid 20s, I'm not clear on even what I want my work to be. Well, without that distinction, who am I? Mm-hmm. If I don't have a relationship, if I don't have an intimate or a close relationship, then am I really a man? And so we go through all of this. I'll back up. In our programs, we have programs for men and women, and often in our men's program, so these are veterans, first responders, you know, any way you slice it, a man's man, right? Men's men, guys who have done really hard things and stood up and taken on the world and the evil in the world. And we'll ask this question, when did you become a man? And if there's 40 guys in the room, you'll get 40 different answers.
Sure.
And none of them speak to who they were actually created by God to be. Mm. So I think the unique, and again, women struggle with this. I'm not saying they don't, but men struggle in a unique way with understanding who they are. And until you nail down the identity piece, this is who I am, you cannot fulfill the purpose piece. Because if I don't know who I am, I don't know why I'm here. And if I don't know why I'm here, then I have no hope. And so much of, I think, what men struggle with goes back to, I just can't even define who I am or what I'm about. I have no clarity around identity.
Yeah. Yeah. I have done a number of episodes, especially in the early days, but we've talked about this a lot, in that it seems to me that mission is paramount for men.
Yes.
Whereas women, I know tons of women that are so, like, they're so busy, and they're involved, and they're making a difference, and they've got the school, they got the kids, they're doing so many things. And if you were to ask a woman about mission, they would just kind of snort at you and be like, what do you mean? I've got this full life. That's like, men, it's different. If you don't have something that's at the center of what you're about, men, in my experience, been a part of a ton of men's groups, they can drift, they can drink too much, they can do too much porn, and they just get in these shame spirals, because when they're really honest with themselves and in their quiet moments, they're like, what in the hell is my life really about? They haven't answered the most important question that they could ask themselves. And so without that, they become prone to shame, prone to guilt, prone to addiction, all these different things. I don't know if that resonates with what you have found as well, but for me, it's been super clear that, like, you know, if you don't find a mission, and, you know, not everybody that is listening is a Christian, but you need to find, you know, if you're a Christian, it's a God-centered mission. What does God have in mind for you? Pray, get alone, like, get with God and find out what movement is in store for you. If you're not particularly that way, it still is the question of, what is my life going to be about? And if you don't answer that question, you're treading along the shallow water. You're never swimming in the deeper water where all the gold is, right?
Yeah. I mean, men are very good at just passing the time. I think, you know, back to your men in their 40s, 50s, and 60s are playing video games all the time. Mm-hmm. There are men who are married and have kids, but they don't understand their role because, again, they don't have clarity around who they are. So there is no purpose or mission. And so they'll get home after working and they'll go sit in a room by themselves for the next 10 hours. They'll do all of the things that you just talked about because there's no anchor. There's no, this is why I'm here. Yeah. This is what I'm here to accomplish. And without that, the best a man can do is drift. Some are more intelligent than others. Some are more gifted with their hands than others. Mm-hmm. Some have some talents, others don't. And so they may be able to make it look like they're doing good work, but they're dead on the inside. They know that they're drifting through life. And that's no life at all. Without mission, you know, I would use the word purpose. Without purpose, I mean, hope goes away. Any motivation to accomplish anything goes away. Fighting the fights that a man needs to fight become unimportant because I don't even know what it is I'm here to accomplish.
Right. I mean, I have my purpose at my desk, not because I don't know it, but because there's days when I kind of feel drifty. I feel that kind of part of me that's like, what in the heck am I doing? It's like, look up. There it is right there. yourself. Take 10 minutes, go in the other room, get reconnected. You have a mission and have a purpose. You just, right now, your brain went brain freeze and you think there's no, you know, there's no direction. You have clear direction, Tony. You know, it's like,
That's fair.
Yeah. I wanted to, you said something in the book, in the chapter, Embrace the Moment, that it was like you were speaking right to me. You said, quote, I sometimes wonder how much of my life I have wasted by simply trying to get to the other side of what I was doing without stopping long enough to embrace the moment. I wonder how much anxiety and frustration I've dealt with unnecessarily had I focused on the things I could control rather than worry about the things I couldn't, unquote. I might have done a little paraphrasing there, but This may have been coaching for me or insights for me. It's like there's a part of my brain that's like, once I get to this, then I'm going to X. Once I save this amount in my retirement, then X. It's always like I'm always like in a process moving to when I'm going to be peaceful, when I'm going to be really playful and joyous, when I'm really going to be present with my wife. I'm always moving through things. Is my tendency. And as I get older, I'm 59, I've realized that God is like, you need to take a deep breath and be present to everything. That's one of your new instructions. Because you're like a hamster. You just keep going from the wheel to wheel.
Yeah.
Enough already. Like you don't need to prove yourself. You don't need to, you know, it's not about getting over there. You're always here and God's always with you. Why are you pedaling so hard? Right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, what you just described is my kind of fallback. And it's a fairly miserable way to live.
There's no real joy in it. I agree, man.
Because you're just trying to get to the next thing all the time. And man, sometimes I can't even help it. There are times where I'm like, okay, the way I'm going to get through this is by thinking about when it's over. the way I'm going to stay focused on this is by getting to whatever happens next. And it's this constant pursuit of next. And the problem with that, and you can be very productive. Again, a lot of these behaviors cause you to look from the outside like you really have it all together. And you can be very productive and successful and people look at you and go, wow, you've done a great job. But you know you're miserable because you haven't enjoyed any of it.
Right.
And you're just moving from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. And for me, it's something I have to fight and come back to all of the time. But this is the be still and know that I am God. Mm-hmm. And this is so many of the Psalms that tell us to rest and to wait. And that doesn't mean you sit and do nothing. It just means you find joy in the fact that God has you where he has you, that he is involving you in an important work that he set in front of you, that you get to be a part of raising your kids and enjoying this relationship that you're in with your spouse and all of these things that we have the opportunity to be a part of. One thing that's really helped me with this, and I struggle, it's funny that this is a struggle of mine. I speak a lot, I write a lot, I do things, but one of the things I struggle with is taking time every day to write down three things that I'm thankful for today, right? Mm-hmm. I've got a journal, and one of the questions on this journal is write three things that you're thankful for today. Man, I struggle with that more than I struggle with so many other things I'm trying to communicate, right? Because yeah. I just, my brain doesn't function that way.
Right.
And so it's getting back to the place where I recognize there's so much to be thankful for. Yeah. And if I don't accomplish this thing, it's going to be okay. I am still so blessed and have so many good things in my life. And let me just enjoy the process of building.
Yeah.
The process of creating, if it's creating, or putting this thing together, or spending time with these people, or doing this thing. Let me just enjoy the process of it, because once I get to the other side of it, it's over, mm-hmm. and I don't get to reclaim that. Mm-hmm. And
Well, then what I was doing
very
was
intentional living. Yes.
Yeah. What I was doing was like you. The problem was, as soon as I got to the other side, I put another process in place. So I still right. wasn't there. Yeah. I was like, well, I've still got four other things I'm doing. I've got two right. shows. Like, you can always find reasons and excuses mm. not to be present, not to make your life sweeter. God wants us to enjoy our life. You're like, this is yes. such a blessing to be here in this time. Yes. And I just feel like it to me, for me, and I'm not speaking about you, Jeremy, I'm speaking about myself. Like, to me, there's a little bit of ignorance and a little arrogance when I'm like, well, God, I'm going to really enjoy this beautiful life once I get to the end of these four or five processes I'm always working right. on. It's like, why don't right. you enjoy it now? You know, yeah. and I just feel a little sheepish sometimes when I saw the question. I'm like, I got to grab that. That is just right up my wheelhouse. And it's one I struggle with. And I'm at the age when I'm kind of an elder. I'm almost 60s. This is when they start talking about being elders to the church and being elders yeah. to your community. And one of the things I've noticed about the elders I really admire is they're very present. Almost like, it's almost like a return to childhood where there's like, they're really like, mm. There's like this kind of joy in the moment. And I'm like, I got to get me some of that. I got to find my way yeah. back to that, because I've been so driven to create content, to create useful things for people, that I'm like, okay, well, that's great, but you're missing a big piece that I think you really need to have. God really wants you to have this moving forward, So, yeah.
Yeah. And there's, there's very little rest in that. I think some of it for me is believing that there will be peace on the other side of whatever I'm working on. Then I'll have mm-hmm. peace. Then I'll have contentment. Then I'll have joy. Yeah. We see this often in people who work for 40 years and save and do all the things they can so they can retire. And it's crazy to me that so many will work for 40 or 50 years yeah. so that they can enjoy maybe 10 or 15 years if they're in very good health and they're in a very good situation, maybe 20 years. But the majority of their life is spent saying, if I can just get to the other thing, if I can get to the next thing. Meanwhile, you're missing the best years of your life physically and emotionally and relationally. Yeah. You're not engaged with your kids who are growing up because you're trying to get to something else. And so you have to step back once in a while and go, all right, what's actually going on? And I do need to build. I do need to work. I need to plan. This is not about not doing those things. I just can't find joy in those things. I need to find joy in where I am right now.
I hear you, brother. You're speaking my language. You wrote the sovereignty, quote, the sovereignty of God is a topic I will never fully understand, unquote. I wanted to give you a chance to talk about this. I share this sentiment as well, and I have some comments about how that's been tested that I wanted to get your comments first and get your thoughts on that phrase. Yeah.
Well, I think I wrote about this in the book. I grew up in a Christian home, and I've been familiar, right, with the concept of God's sovereignty throughout my early life. But I remember the moment it first dawned on me that God really is sovereign, and I don't understand it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was, and this is kind of the whole story of March or Die. There was a firefight that took place, and some lessons I learned from that. We got engaged in this pretty major fight in Iraq, and when it was over, on the other side of it, it dropped on me like a load of bricks, just this almost physical weight. And it was an emotional thought, maybe a spiritual thought, that the enemy doesn't care who I am. Those guys over there that we were just, trading rounds with, they don't care who I am, where I went to school, what I look like, what country I'm from. They don't care. None of it matters. They're just trying to, hurt me, kill me like I was them.
Yep.
all of the things that we were doing in that moment, it all kind of caught up with me. We had been traveling for a couple months and doing a lot of things, and now we're in this fight. The fight's over. Everything's okay. I'm safe. And it dawned on me, only God has control over anything that happens. Mm-hmm. And what that means for me looking back is I can control the things that God allows me to have some control over. I can work hard. I can train hard. I can prepare. I can do the things that I can do. But beyond that, I can't do anything. So, you know, it's taken a lot of years, but kind of distill that down to this thought. Hard work is my responsibility. Success is God's responsibility. Mm. I can't determine outcomes. Only God can determine outcomes. But I can determine doing with what I have to the best of my ability. That's stewardship. But outcomes are God's domain. That's not my domain. And so when it comes to the sovereignty of God, it's recognizing that the Bible teaches God knows everything. God is all powerful. You know, he is eternal, both directions, from the beginning and the end, no beginning, no end. He's known all about this time that we're talking about right now. This is what we're doing right now. He's known about it into eternity past. You know, all these things that kind of encompass sovereignty, that God is absolutely in control. And yet, we have a responsibility within the context of his sovereignty to steward well over the moments and the resources and the opportunities that he's given to us. And so I don't understand it. I don't know how it all works. I don't know where it all comes together. But I remember in that moment thinking, only God can control what happens. And so instead of trying to control outcomes, which is what I have spent a lot of my life trying to do, control how things are going to turn out.
Sure.
I just need to control whether or not I do the right thing in the moment, being a person of integrity, walking out or living out character, and then letting God be God. So I need to stop trying to be God and just let God be God.
Yeah, I struggled. I think I take it now as just a test of faith for me. And I know there's plenty of Christians that would probably feel this way too, because 15 years ago, I was like, okay, yeah, there's some evil in the world. There's some corruption. Nowadays, it is shocking to me and a lot of people how corrupt and evil, like, it's matter of fact. People are like, yeah, there's a satanic pedophile cabal running things. Right. And it's just matter of fact. And I'm like, you know, when I think about what they're doing with children, trafficking children, using children as currency, that infuriates me to the point where I'm like, come on, you know, like what more do we need to get God's backing on it? Right. And so that's where it gets my ire, where I'm like, come on, you know, how can this many children be suffering and this many good people and good Christians be suffering through this war, this biblical war. And, you know, I always land on, look, you can't just be pissed off and you certainly can't be angry at God. Like, I'm questioning what's going on. And I always end up landing on, look, everything, every piece of adversity is a test of your faith right now. So don't lose your faith, Tony. And don't talk, don't be a black pillar. Don't be a doomer. Don't do any of that, because we gave you gifts to be uplifting, positive, God-centered. And your voice matters. So don't lose what God gave you for this moment because you're wondering about God's timeline. Because, like, to your point earlier, it's God's timeline, not Tony's timeline. So, yeah.
Well, and that's, you know, that's where I think that's where everyone struggles with this concept of God's sovereignty is like, well, if he can, why doesn't he?
Yeah.
Why does evil exist? Why does he allow it to exist? And we can go, you know, down a very deep, dark hole trying to understand that. And we know from scripture that the reason brokenness and you know, evil and all those things exist is because of sin. We understand that. We can look at the Bible and even map back to the origin of that sin, and we can talk all the way through that from Genesis into the book of Revelation. We know that God gets ultimate victory. But I think what we all struggle with is it's the children that are hurt, as you just mentioned. It's it's the innocence. Right. So then that becomes a question of who is innocent and are any of us innocent? And again, you can spend forever answering those questions. But what most people don't do is go, all right, I'm not God. I don't understand it. He does. Mm-hmm. I don't. And I need to be okay with that.
Yep.
And instead of continuing to ask why God, I need to start asking what God, what do you want me to do? Mm-hmm. What is it that I should be doing? Not why is this happening? Not why am I here? Not how did I get here? But what should I do now? And you know, with that, I will at times say how we got here is far less important than what we do next. Yeah. And man, if there are lessons to learn about how we got here, then learn those lessons. But how you got here is far less important than what you do next. And that's trusting God to be God.
Yeah.
And asking, all right, what can I do with the opportunities, the resources, and the gifts that I have?
That's great. I love it. Yeah. You know, in the book, March and Die, one of the real centerpieces, I think, is how you handle and how people handle adversity. It's got a bunch of great stories from Iraq and adversity as a centerpiece, because you said at one point, you know, most people, if not all people, experience that life can be difficult, if not their whole lives, and certainly in chapters where it's like, God, that was a tough chapter. I wanted to get your thoughts on adversity. I saw, since it's, I got March Madness on in the background right now, I'm a big March Madness fan.
Yeah.
And I saw a clip by Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino is a famous basketball coach. He coached Louisville and Kentucky, and now he's the coach of St. John's. And it was in the locker room. I don't know what the circumstances were, but I could tell by Coach Pitino's tone to his players that perhaps they were down at halftime and he was really pissed off about it. And he was just laying into these young guys as only kind of a basketball coach that's loved and respected. You get anyway. Right. I told my wife, because I showed my wife the clip, and she was like, God, is that how coaches talk to their players? I'm like, yeah, it's how my coaches talk to me, and I really appreciate it.
Right.
My father didn't teach. He didn't talk to me that way. I wanted to be talked to that way, right? By an uncle that was just like, God, and he was just telling them, where is your mental toughness? He goes, you get the first whiff of adversity, and you're all walking around hangdog, like you're beaten. He goes, I can't believe what I'm looking at. He goes, what? This isn't even about basketball adversity. This is about adversity in life. This is a metaphor for how you're going to handle life. And right now, you are all giving up the first sign of trouble in your lives. I cannot have that. And he is just going on and on. And I was like, what a gift he's giving them in very sharp words to remind them this is beyond basketball. Where is your guts? Where is your mental toughness? Where is your response to adversity that's going to hit you tomorrow in life or next week in life or next year? You're going to be facing this over and over. And if you're just going to become a victim and just lay down, your life's not going to be extraordinary at all. And I so appreciated his words, and I so appreciated all your words in your great book about adversity. But I wanted to give you a chance, since it seemed to me like this book really, the centerpiece really is adversity for people.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it's, you know, in a sense, writing a book like that is trying to find the purpose or the value, let's say value in adversity. It's recognizing that if you're human, you're going to deal with some degree of adversity, some more or less, but all of us are going to deal with difficult things. To experience trauma and brokenness and hurt is not unusual. You're not special because you've gone through something like that. Sure. You're human. That's human. We could look at a lot of examples, and including the example of our Savior, Jesus Christ, the only perfect human who ever lived, was murdered by his creation. When you talk about trauma and brokenness and hurt, I mean, that's the standard, right? The rest of us probably deserve some of it. God certainly did not. Yeah. So to deal with brokenness, to deal with hurt, to deal with those things is normal. To deal with adversity is normal. People who succeed in life are people who understand adversity comes into every life, but when it does, I get to decide whether or not I'm going to stay where I am, give up, wave the white flag, I would say give up and die, or I'm going to put one foot in front of the other and march. One of my favorite books is, it's not a Christian book. It's a book called Man's Search for Meaning.
Oh yeah.
By Viktor Frankl. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've read that, but it's a fantastic book.
It is.
Viktor Frankl was a Jewish Austrian psychologist. He was interned in a concentration camp during World War II. His wife and unborn child were taken to another concentration camp and killed. I think he spent almost 4 years or just or right around 4 years in that concentration camp. And as a psychiatrist, he observed human behavior and made so many observations really around the concept of what does it mean to be happy. And again, this is not a Christian book, but he observed that there were some who went through that situation and they did their work and they got to the other side and survived. And there were those who died of almost heart sickness. They just gave up. They quit because things became so difficult. He talks about the difference between being a victim and someone who's not a victim, someone who continues forward. He makes a statement, and I think it's a great statement. I use it often, that between stimulus and response, there is space. And in that space, there is the last of the human freedoms, the freedom or the power to decide. I love that.
Yeah.
Between stimulus, that's what happens to you, and response, obviously how you respond, there's space. And in that space is your ability to decide what you're going to do now. You don't always get to control the stimulus, what happens to you, but you always get to decide how you're going to respond. In our context here, you don't always get to decide what type of difficulty comes into your life. In fact, most of the time you don't, right? Or we wouldn't choose it.
Yeah.
You don't get to decide what kind of difficulty comes into your life, but you get to decide how you're going to respond to that. And, you know, in writing this book, it's a journey, I guess, trying to ask and answer the question, how do we respond to those difficult moments that come into our lives? And then boiling it all down to this, you have to make a decision. Are you going to stay where you are and die, or are you going to put one foot in front of the other and march? And that's where that title comes from.
Yeah, I think there's a spiritual maturity that comes, you know, when we're young. I don't want to speak for everybody, but when you're young, I think it's almost like, you know, your soul, at least in American culture, this kind of happily ever after, that you, when you're young, they don't indicate that there's going to be all kinds of challenges. There's this kind of, you know, this kind of floaty idea that, you know, you could live, like even your marriage could just be without conflict. It's like, that is not realistic whatsoever. Right. That is not a realistic portrayal of what's great about a long-term marriage, right? It's like so much more soulful than that. And I think some people, they think, oh, I'm just going to live happily ever. Like, I'm just going to be happy all the time. And it's trying to float above it. And I think there's a real spiritual maturity. At least I've noticed my own arc. As I've gotten older, I've recognized the beauty of all of the challenges and adversity that I have faced, because that's when all of the learning happens. That's when the learning is accelerated. I'm tested again in a different way. Like, oh, you were tested over here when you were younger. Now we're going to test, God's going to test you over here to see how you respond to that. It's very interesting, isn't it? And it's like, it becomes this kind of experiment with God and yourself and the different circumstances that happen, rather than, I think when I was younger, if something happened that was challenging or would be called adversity, I'd be like, oh no, something bad is happening. Rather than now I'm like, okay, that's not how I probably would have scripted it, but this is what's happening, and what can I learn from it now? What is this learning? Yeah, and it's like, it's so much better. It's so much more peaceful, because I'm like, oh, I'm still learning as much as I ever did at 59. You know, it's there are different lessons and more refined. I don't know, before we turn the corner and talk about Mighty Oak, I didn't know if you wanted to mention anything about that or you were complete on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great. I think it's two things. One, you use the word maturity, and that's exactly what it is. It's maturity. I think it's also an ongoing or continuing faith in God. It's understanding that God is God, that He provides ultimate victory. Again, He's sovereign. And so these difficulties that come into my life, I have things to learn from them. Sometimes I just have to move through them, whatever the case, but that doesn't change the outcome. So much of our fear as it relates to difficulty is based on this notion that, oh no, maybe things are not going to work out. Mm-hmm. Maybe God has somehow lost control. Maybe, you know, whatever. I'm not going to experience the victory I thought I would in Christ. And we need to rest in that. We need to settle in that. It's interesting. There are people, I think all of us know people like this, who go through things and go through very difficult things. And it's not that they seem unbothered. it's just that they seem unshaken.
Yep, like, for sure.
You know, they lose people, they struggle with things, they grieve, they do that, but it doesn't shake them.
Right.
And what is that? Well, it's maturity. It's a recognition that difficulty comes into everyone's life, and it's faith or confidence in God that I may not understand this right now, but I can trust God.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. You know, we're rounding the home stretch here. I wanted to give you a chance to tell the readers where they can find March or Die, your great book.
Yeah.
Also tell us a little bit about Mighty Oak Foundation, the work you're doing there. Anything else you might want to say before we sign off today?
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, the book can be found on Amazon or on our website, mightyoaksprograms.org. There's a store there. You can find it, mightyoaksprograms.org. And on that website, more important than my book, is an explanation of our programs. We serve veterans, active duty service members, first responders, and spouses. We don't charge anything for our program. We don't charge anything for travel to get to our program. So if you fall into one of those categories, we'd love for you to check that out. There's a place to apply to the program. We'll do what we can to get you in. 5 days, one of five locations across the country, and we take care of everything to get you there. If you're interested in what we do, you didn't serve, you're not serving, but you're interested, take a look at the website, a lot of great videos and other resources and other ways that you can get involved. But yeah, that's the best place to go for all things related to what we just talked about, mightyoaksprograms.org.
Love it. Jeremy, thank you so much for coming on Base Camp for Men and sharing all of your great stories and your insight and your wisdom. Really appreciate it. Felt like we were sitting around a campfire speaking truth about all the different things we've discovered recently. So I really appreciate your time today. God bless. And let's just keep in touch. And maybe we do this again another time as things unfold.
Yeah, let's do it. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Sorry about the lame audio on my side. I will make sure we're good for next week. Thank you for your patience, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week.
If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Base Camp for Men.